So I wanted to talk about the new covenant. Last month when we had communion, it just really kind of struck me that the new covenant was something that'd be important to talk about. And let's see if I'm going to get this. And so we're having communion again next week, so it'll be good to have this fresh in our minds. So my motives were good, to talk about the new covenant, but I was really naive. When I started digging into it, and I kind of knew this, and you guys probably are all aware of this, but there's no shortage of views on covenants in general, and on the new covenant in particular, and it's one of these things where when I started looking into it, I just started getting in over my head, and I finally had to realize that, I'm not going to deal with this whole thing comprehensively, not even close. So, this is a really hotly debated topic in theology, and if you're really aggressive or something like that, you might want to take this on for a master's or a PhD thesis, but not for a Sunday school class. So I'm not going to do a comprehensive look. I'd like to take an overview of kind of set the stage to get us thinking about covenants. But even there now, I wasn't sure who all was going to be here this morning. I noticed that the Irving family, it looked like there were some theologian-type people there, and I didn't know. I just it may be that some people might not hold exactly to the same theology I do. And this is one of these areas where you can very quickly figure out whether any two people are on the same page. Anytime you come to the subject, an overview, you're going to lay your cards on the table as far as where you're coming from. So there's no such thing as a neutral or objective way to present this. But I'm going to just go ahead and give it give you my take on it. And also, I'm not going to. Excuse me. I'm not going to try to prove my position. There's not enough time, and that's not the purpose. The purpose really is to be able to appreciate, have some more appreciation for the new covenant when we have communion next week. And if you disagree, I'm happy to talk about it afterwards. So we'll just go ahead and try to dive in. Okay. So, and in the institution of the Lord's Supper, Jesus refers to a new covenant. So it's the topic is central to our worship in communion. I did a word search. I've got Logos. It's a Bible software program, and it makes life a lot easier. I think that people that it kind of gives you an appreciation for people who, compile concordances, and it's just a boatload of work to go through that stuff, manually. These software programs are pretty nice, but anyway, I found 321 occurrences of the English word covenant in 300 different verses. So we're not going to look at all those, but we will look at quite a few. Not hundreds, but tens of verses. A fair number of these things, as you might expect, refer to covenants between men, and often they're between kings. So, this king made a I can't remember the names of some of the kings of Israel and Judah, but kings after the kingdom split between northern and southern kingdom. Occasionally, the two kings would make covenants with each other, and they'd also make covenants with the Arameans and various other people. But most of the covenants in the Bible are between God and man. So what is a covenant? Well, today, and I think all of you probably know this, it's a contract. So if you've ever lived in a house that was in part of a housing development that had an HOA, then you're probably familiar with CC&Rs, covenants, conditions, and restrictions. And my advice to you, if you've never been in that situation, is to not buy into one of those things. They're supposed to be for the benefit of everyone, but when I lived up in Washington State, I bought a brand new house. It turns out that I think that it's actually the law up there that all new housing developments have to have an HOA as part of the development. And so I bought into that. I bought that house, and I was maintaining my yard, and it was in good shape. But HOAs are funny. They have rules, and they have people that are the rule police, and some of that stuff's a matter of interpretation. And the rule police woman, I found out, didn't like a plant that was growing in my yard that the landscaper had put there. And they sent me a letter saying, you got to change this. And I sent them back a letter saying, take a long walk on a short pier. And they sent me a letter back saying, we're going to foreclose on your house. And I said, you can't foreclose on my house. I don't have a mortgage, because I didn't have one by then. And they sent me a letter back saying, oh, yes, we can. They can slap a lien on it because of the HOA. So anyway, it's a contract that I entered into, and I didn't read all the fine print, and I don't know if it would have stopped me from buying the house or not. But anyway, that's kind of a big aside. I finally ended up, well, actually, we went to arbitration and remediation, I guess, and got it taken care of. The plants were okay, but but contracts are serious business. I mean, that was a lot of money. That was almost my whole net worth there, and they were gonna take it away from me legally, or they were gonna try to, and there was conceivably a mechanism for them to do that. So, contracts are for real, and I imagine that you all know that. So contracts, contracts between kings, wars are fought over those things. I tend to, read in the Bible about all of these contracts, with God, and I just don't take them all that seriously, I guess. It's so easy to read through the Bible and to not really think about how serious these things are, but they're pretty serious. Okay, so contracts normally have some basic constituent elements. There are parties to a contract. There are things to be performed, or sometimes called a promise. And I don't know if I should be looking this. I'm looking back there, and you guys are, I don't know, maybe I should be doing this. So, okay, great. There may be conditions, there are penalties, and there's an agreement or a ratification. So from this list, it's pretty a pretty obvious distinction for categorizing covenants jumps right out at us. They're either conditional or unconditional. So conditional. If you do this, then I'll do that. So who's seen the Blues Brothers? A few of you. Okay, so remember, I'm tempted to recommend, if you haven't seen it, to go see it. There's more than a little bit of foul language, but that's about the worst of it. It's a silly movie, but anyway, Jake and Elwood, Jake gets out of prison, and they're trying to put the band back together, And they're trying to get their lead horn man, who, you know, trumpet player, who took a straight job as a maitre d' in a high-end restaurant. So they pull up and go into this restaurant, and they stick out like a sore thumb. And their buddy, the maitre d', comes over and says, "Hey guys, come on, let's get out of here," you know. And he says, "We're putting the band back together." "No, I can't do it. No way." And they back and forth and back and forth. And finally, Jake says, "If you say no, me and my brother are going to come here for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day of the week." So that's a condition. You know, if you say no, then we're going to do something. Okay? So that's kind of a silly example. But so an unconditional covenant or condition is just, "I'm going to do something." So I can't remember which movie this is, but John Wayne says, "I'm not going to hit you. I'm not going to hit you. Oh, the heck I'm not." And, you know, so he changes his mind, but it's, you know, it's not, it doesn't depend on, he doesn't say, "If you do this, I'll hit you or I won't." You know, he's just saying, I'm going to do something. You know, that's, you know, and so I'm kind of belaboring something that's sort of obvious, but I just want you to, you know, it's pretty important in biblical covenants to consider whether the party, whether someone is obliged to do something as part of it. Well, sorry, someone's going to be obliged to do something, but whether what happens depends on what the performance of one party depends on what another party does. In conditional covenants, it does, and in unconditional covenants, it doesn't. So a clear example of a conditional covenant in the Bible is the Mosaic Covenant. So let's see, let's look at Deuteronomy 30, 15 through 20, and let's see if I can do this. Okay, so I'm reading from the New American Standard, and let's see if I can. "See, I have set before you today life and prosperity and death and adversity, in that I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways and to keep his commandments and all his statutes and his judgments, that you may live and multiply, and that the Lord your God may bless you in the land where you are entering to possess it. But if your heart turns away and you will not obey, but are drawn away and worship other gods and serve them, I declare to you today that you shall surely perish. You will not prolong your days in the land where you are entering, where you are crossing the Jordan to enter and possess it. I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have set before you life and death, the blessing and the curse. So choose life in order that you may live, you and your descendants. By loving the Lord your God, by obeying his voice, and by holding fast to him for..." "So choose life in order that you may live, you and your descendants, by loving the Lord your God, by obeying his voice, and by holding fast to him. For this is your life and the length of your days, that you may live in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give them." So pretty clearly, I hope it's clear, that's conditional. He's saying, if you obey God, if you seek him with all your heart, if you love the Lord your God, he's going to give you this land that he's promised to your fathers. But if you don't, it's not going to happen. You know, you're going to perish. Okay? So is the condition there pretty obvious? I hope so. Oh, well. Okay, so a clear example of an unconditional covenant in the Bible is the Abrahamic covenant in Genesis 15. So, I'm just going to go ahead and read it. So, After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, "Do not fear, Abram. I am a shield to you. Your reward shall be very great." Abram said, "O Lord God, what will you give me since I am childless, and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus?" And Abram said, "Since you have given no offspring to me, one born in my house is my heir." Then behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, "This man will not be your heir, but one who will come forth from your own body, he shall be your heir." And he took him outside and said, "Now look toward the heavens and count the stars, if you are able to count them." And he said to him, "So shall your descendants be." Then Abram believed in the Lord, and God reckoned it to him as righteousness. And he said to him, "I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldees to give you this land to possess it." Excuse me. He said, "O Lord God, how may I know that I will possess it?" So he said to him, "Bring me a 3-year-old heifer and a 3-year-old female goat and a 3-year-old ram and a turtle dove and a young pigeon." Then he brought all these to him and cut them in two and laid each half opposite the other, but he did not cut the birds. The birds of prey came down upon the carcasses, and Abram drove them away. Now when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell on Abram, and behold, terror and great darkness fell upon him. God said to Abram, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed for 400 years. But I will also judge the nation whom they will serve, and afterward they will come out with many possessions. As for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace. You will be buried in a good old age. Then in the fourth generation they will return here, for the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet complete." It came about when the sun had set that it was very dark, and behold, there appeared a smoking oven and a flaming torch which passed between the pieces. On that day the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, "To your descendants I have given this land, from the river of Egypt as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenite and the Kenizzite and the Kedemite and the Hittite and the Perizzite and the Rephaim and the Amorite and the Canaanite and the Girgashite and the Jebusite." So I know that was kind of a lot to hear, but Was there a condition there? Did God say anything to Abraham about, "Do this, and I'll give you that land," and I'll give you a descendant from your own body? I didn't notice him saying anything like that. I mean, I don't think I missed it. He didn't say, "Do this or do that, and I'll give you a descendant." He just said, "I'm going to give you a descendant." But let's go back and take a look at. Okay, first of all, when Abram brought, God told him to go get those animals, so he did, and he cut them in half. And that was part of the ritual of covenants back in the Old Testament. They cut these animals in half and laid them out. And the parties of the covenant would walk between between the halves of the animals. And as we saw in a few slides ago, there's usually a punishment involved for failure to fulfill your part of the covenant, and that is symbolized by the animals being cut in half and walking between them. It's basically saying, just like what happened to these animals, that'll happen to me, to the two of us who walk through this, walk between these animals, if I fail to keep my end of the bargain. So there's the punishment, or the penalty, maybe I should say, that's being displayed there. But if we look in verse 17, it came about when the sun had set that it was very dark, and behold, there appeared a smoking oven and a flaming torch which passed between the pieces. Well, that was a manifestation of the Lord, And he was the only one that passed between the pieces. Abram was asleep. Abram didn't pass between the pieces. So God was making that covenant. He was taking it all on himself. And that's, you know, so that's pretty important. God was the only one who passed between the pieces, and he was the only one that ratified the covenant. So God's saying, I'm going to do this. I'm not saying I'm going to do it if you do something. He's just saying he's going to do that. So that's, I think, a pretty clear example of an unconditional covenant. So I hope that that's pretty clear. All right, let's see what the next. Okay. So the next thing I want to do is look at examples of major covenants in the Bible, and I think that's probably going to be a good place to start for the main service. Okay.